You. And we will move on to item number 25, an ice fishing access report from Jake Davis.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roland, can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can.
All right, let me pull up the presentation.
Yes, we can see it.
Excellent. Well, good morning, everyone. Again, my name is Jake Davis, Fisheries Program Administrator. This morning, just going to share some information on ice fishing access. It is that time of the year where the hard water season has arrived, and we have a lot of users across the state that are accessing the water over this hard water. And just want to provide some information on how Game Fish and Parks helps get these users to the resource and some of the things that we do and also some of the challenges. So just a quick overview. I want to cover our state and regional breakdowns. We have a number of access areas across the state that we maintain. I want to provide those numbers. Also talk about partnerships, because this certainly isn't something that we can do alone. When we look at the number of resources and the number of access areas on the landscape that we maintain. Additionally, I want to talk about some of the challenges that staff encounter throughout the winter period here with Mother Nature and the things that she throws at us from time to time. Additionally, talk about some opportunities that we have, and then really I want to talk about some angler resources, because we really are truly fortunate to have some fantastic ice fishing opportunities across the state of South Dakota, and want to make sure users know some of the resources that Game Fish and Parks provides that may help them plan a trip. So the first thing, again, as I mentioned, is just some of our inventory, what we have. I have it broken down by region, but really across the state, there's 240 areas that we maintain for ice fishing access. This is, again, a lot. And when you look at the regional breakdowns out west, in Region 1, there's 39 locations. Central South Dakota, Region 2, we have 80 locations that are maintained. Region 3 and 4 on the eastern side, we have 35 and 86 locations that are maintained, respectively. So, again, a lot of different areas, types of water, types of areas that are maintained by staff, and each one's a little bit different. You can see in the picture here, you've got several anglers that are walking out onto the ice. Again, we'll talk about some of the challenges that are associated with the kinds of ways that people access the water as well. But first, I want to make sure that I highlight the partnerships, because with all those access areas, we certainly don't do this alone. When we look at Game Fish and Parks as a department, this is really an all hands on deck at times, and we appreciate the assistance. The aquatic section really appreciates the assistance we get. There's times that Parks absolutely helps. There's a number of access areas that occur in Parks, and it's just easier for the folks there to help maintain those access areas. Also, our partners in Habitat and on the terrestrial side really assist during times of the year when we may have some kind of weather event, and all of a sudden we have a number of access areas that need maintenance really as soon as possible. So I really appreciate the help that we get from those resources as well, and of course within our aquatic section as well. Then we also partner with some external partners, cities, counties, townships, whatever it might be. A number of these access areas occur within their jurisdictional boundaries, and it's just easier for them to help us maintain them. And additionally, when we look at, say, a county, they may have a snowplow that's on the road maintaining county roads. It's easier for us to partner with that entity that might already be out there rather than us sending a staff member. So, we do have a number of partners, and we also partner with federal entities and also private contractors. I do want to talk about the challenges that we encounter throughout a given winter. Big thing is Mother Nature, wind and snow. A lot of folks here are certainly aware of what wind and snow and the impacts that can happen. And a small amount of snow, but on a high amount of wind, can really move and cause some issues in certain locations. Also, we have remote areas. We may have an ice fishing access that isn't located near an office and takes a while for staff to get to. And at times, we're not always aware of what access issue might exist, just because it's hard to keep the pulse, finger the pulse on, but still doesn't mean that we don't get to them and maintain them. We also have some that have some long access roads and trails. Additionally, we have changing conditions. Some of the examples that staff run into that may be issues when we look at ice access are going to be heaves. You can look in the picture on the bottom right. That's an example of a shoreline heave. You have ice that's pushed up against a shoreline, creates these scenarios where you almost have a wall of sheer ice. So again, those are issues we run into that can happen on the shoreline or offshore. We also have weak shorelines or slush areas that can create issues. Road conditions getting to those, whether it's snow drifts or ice conditions. And then also filling reservoirs. And what I mean with this is when you're filling reservoirs, especially in western South Dakota, what happens is that sheet of ice is constantly being lifted up. And what that does is create soft shorelines. So the first 5 to 10 feet can often be quite hard to access because it's constantly being lifted by increasing water levels. Additionally, some of the challenges we have is just the ways that users access the ice. We have a wide range of ways that people access fisheries on the ice, and that's anything from boat traffic to very expensive ice shacks that are being towed by wheeled vehicles. And so at times we're trying to meet all these different angler uses, if you will, or modes of transportation. And so again, there's just a lot of different ways that people access fisheries, and so we try and keep that in mind. And in some locations we're able to provide access for all of these different forms, and in other cases it's just not always possible. Additionally, we have angling pressure. We have hot bites, they pop up, anglers find out about them, and we have high uses that may result, and then that bite may change. So at times you may have access issues because that pressure just moves around as different bites are found throughout a winter. And that can certainly create some issues when we look at parking, because we may not always have the infrastructure in place, and it's hard to predict where that may or may not happen during a winter period. So I just want to show some pictures of some of those challenges that I mentioned that staff encounter throughout a given hard water period. This is an example of another ice heave on shore. You can see that the boat ramp leads into basically a wall of ice, and so that's where staff have to try and create some access areas to get people to that water. We don't go onto the ice. We just create access to the ice, essentially, through something like this kind of barrier. Here's an example of another ice heave. You can see right on the shoreline that dirt transitioning into the white ice, and with that, there's, again, major issues with that ice pushing up against the shoreline. This is a picture of a ice heave that's been cleared. It's a little hard to tell with the way that the coloration is. However, basically what happens is staff are able to remove that ice to create a level surface to reach the fishery. And then snow removal. And this is something that can change very quickly depending on what the winds do. And unfortunately as well, it can create some consistent maintenance, because if we have some snow that's blowing around, we may clear an access, and the next day if it's windy again, it may blow closed again. And so we're constantly trying to keep an eye on this. But here's an example of a snowdrift forming on an access area. You can see a few individuals have driven through it, but again, we're trying to keep this clear consistently to allow anglers to access the ice. And then parking. This is an example of, say, a hot bite scenario, and anglers hear about it, and we have a number of vehicles that are lining a road. And this is something that pops up periodically throughout the winter. If there's ways that we can direct this traffic to a safer location, we do. But again, this is something that it's hard to predict going into a winter period where this scenario may pop up based on where a hot bite may pop up as well. That being said, it's a lot of opportunities for us, because there are a lot of fishing opportunities that exist during the hard water period. We're always trying to meet angler expectations. We see ice fishing as a sport that continues to increase in public participation and gain in popularity. And with that, as we increase our access areas across the state, we want to be proactive. We want to increase cooperation. We want to increase partnerships. And of course, we want to promote the sport, because it's really a great opportunity to access fisheries. One thing we like to say is that everybody, you don't need a boat to ice fish. So you can access any part of the water body because of that hard water condition. But ultimately, we want to get users safely to that resource, because ice conditions are dynamic, they change, and it can be unsafe at times. Now I just want to talk about some angler resources, though. So if folks are curious as to where we have these maintained ice fishing areas, I want to point them to our public fishing access map. It's a great tool year-round to provide information on fishing in general. But within that public fishing access map, we have an ice fish tab. And if folks were to click that tab, this map that's displayed here on the slide will display for them, and they can zoom in and out. And what it'll do is designate where these ice fishing access areas, the maintained ice fishing access areas, are at different water bodies. Again, a great way to start with online scouting prior to an ice fishing trip. I also just want to talk about the ways that we encourage folks to ice fish. We have some great introduction courses at our outdoor campuses, ice fishing, learning to fish. Additionally, we send out media posts on ice fishing safety tips, such as ice thickness and what can be on as far as boot traffic or ATVs or wheeled vehicles, just because we always want to remind folks to be very cautious when they're on ice. Ice conditions change quickly. They're not always uniform on water bodies across the entirety of a water body. And so it just be cautious when you're out there. And so we try and provide some information that helps helps anglers maybe understand a little bit of what they should be looking for before they go on that hard water. So again, just wanted to cover that quickly. We encourage everybody to get out and ice fish because we are very fortunate to have the number of resources here in South Dakota. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions, Madam Chair.
Any questions? Commissioner White.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner White here. This last week, someone was sharing with me that a pickup went through the ice. And I guess it came to my question on who is responsible for the response. Is that the county EMT or is Game Fish and Parks in charge of following up with that tragedy?
The chair?
Yes, please.
Commissioner White, are you referring to who's responsible for retrieving the vehicle or assisting the individual if once that vehicle goes through and they're trying to leave the ice?
I think that would be the first one. I mean, the second one. Who do they respond to in the event that there's an accident like this? Is that a Game Fish and Parks response that's expected, or do they look to the county's EMT program?
I'd like to pull a friend if I can.
Yes.
I heard the ring through the chair. Commissioner White, so typically it's going to be a collaborative effort when those incidents occur. Certainly our staff, typically our law enforcement staff, are notified, and they will typically work with county officials. Usually it's the sheriff's office and then probably local rescue teams if it's needed to go that far. But most cases, usually it's a 911 call, and because they're all interconnected with state radio and working together on stuff, typically no different if it's an ice fishing deal or an open water deal. Usually it's a collaborative effort between local officials and our staff as well in our agency.
Very good. Thank you, Director Hirschman. Any other questions, comments? Jake, I do have one. When you talk about making sure there's access and I guess the thickness of the ice, are there partners that we work with? Because there's a lot of different areas for ice fishing in our state. Are there groups or associations that assist with that, report back to what they're seeing in terms of ice thickness, that type of partnership?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I would say the online community shares a lot of information. But what we would say is that even with the information that's out there, ice conditions can change so quickly that we would still recommend that users exercise caution any time they're going on the ice and understand that while there may be some information out there, even if it's a couple hours old, it may have changed since then. And so that's why we don't generally report ice conditions other than here's the general safety recommendations, just because current ice conditions, it's a snapshot in time and can change very quickly.
Very good. Thank you for that answer. Any other questions, comments? Seeing none, thank you very much for that report,